word read and preached. We are lifted up by the sound of the organ, inspired by the voices of the choir. First, before everything else, we are to worship regularly. And then last week, secondly, we looked at the topic, we are to serve eagerly. We are to find our place of service to others, both within these walls and outside of these walls, and give ourselves in that service. It is not an option to sit back and to let others do it. You must find your place of service and pursue that service eagerly, without complaint or holding back in any way. The heart of the Christian experience is revealed in the way that we serve others. We are expected to serve eagerly. Now, earlier this week, a member of this church stopped me, came by my office, and commented on these sermons. I've received a number of comments on them, and I appreciate all of the encouragement. He stopped by and asked about the third expectation. I said, well, we worship regularly, serve eagerly, and give generously. And he commented that I might need to reconsider that because it has been his experience, excuse me, that when it comes to church and expectations, the church begin with money. And he said they begin, they end, and everything in between is about money. And that is too bad, because it's not true. Not true at all. Presbyterians don't like to talk about giving very much. Once a year during stewardship season, that's okay. You know, stewardship sermons rarely get the amens that I think they should. Congregations should be grateful that their pastors don't talk about money nearly as much as Jesus did, because Jesus talked about it a lot. One of the major topics in the Bible is money. How we give ourselves away as good stewards of God's gifts. And in these days, I am aware that it is increasingly difficult to talk about money in the church, mostly because of the excesses of a few preachers. But then there's always been more takers than receivers. A little boy swallowed a nickel and his parents wondered what they should do. And the little boy said, well, let's call the preacher. And they said, why? And they said, because he can get money out of anybody. Yeah. Well, I wish that was true, but in the Presbyterian tradition, though, we don't emphasize our money very much, because I think it's generally because we have been blessed with so much of it. And thank God we have been blessed with a great and generous giving spirit. We give ourselves away as Presbyterians. That's our tradition. And we do it well. We should be proud of it. We should be trumpeting it. The faithfulness that we bring to this topic. Money is important. And there's so many different ways of looking at it. A young man's answering machine went like this. Hi, this is Rick. If you are someone from the phone company, I've already sent the money. If it's one of my parents, please send me some money. If it's my bank, you didn't lend me enough money. If you're a friend, you owe me some money. If you're a female, I have plenty of money. There are a lot of ways to look at money, aren't there? I was reminded that there's such a thing in a home that has a toddler. You know, toddlers have a whole different rule about possessions, you know. It's called toddler control. Very young age, human beings understand that possession is 90% of the law, even the littlest ones among us. But only in the toddler's mind is it 99%, it is 100%. You own everything. This is how it works. If I play with it, it's mine. If it's yours, it's mine. If it looks like mine, it's mine. If it looks like yours, it's mine. If it's theirs, don't tell them, it's mine. If they play with it, they set it down 5 minutes, walk away from it, it's still theirs. Don't think for a second that you can take it away, you'll be in big trouble. To a child, possession is everything. The world revolves around me, they think. It's mine, it stays mine. If it looks like mine, it's probably mine. If I played with it, it's mine. If I touched it, it's mine. But if it's broke, it's yours. Mine, 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 me, me, me. But it doesn't have to be that way. Thank God in the Presbyterian Church, we have been blessed with a great and generous giving spirit. Just look. Do you see this? Do you see an evidence of it right here in front of you today? This church has throughout the years sought to do what was needed to be done in our community for Jesus Christ. Giving has never been and never will be the central focus of what we do. It's not going to be an obstacle for future ministries. It will always be an opportunity for us to faithfully do what God is calling us to do. And the members of this church, through their faithful and generous giving are making a difference for Jesus Christ right here in New Smyrna Beach. Our money is important. But secondly, generosity is even more important. Rather than talk to you about giving, I'd rather address the idea of generosity as the point of the theme of giving generously. That is, I want us to look at our attitude, our generous attitude. A farmer once went to hear the great Methodist preacher John Wesley preach, and the leader was leading with the question of money, and it was examining it under three different ideas. First, he said, get all you can. The farmer said, I'm with this guy. That's great. Get all that you can. That makes sense. That man has got something in him. It's admirable preaching today. And then Wesley said, save all you can. And the farmer thought about it. He's getting excited. Well, now, has there ever been anything like this in the church? And then the preacher denounced thriftiness and waste, and the farmer rubbed his hands and thought, well, all this is I've been taught from my youth. What with getting and hoarding, it seemed to him that salvation had finally come to his house. And then he said, give all you can. And the preacher said, oh man, now I ruined it. Now he's ruined it. You see, a generous attitude with us must begin within us to make a difference in the world. Sure, get all you can, save all you can, but give all you can as well. Does it not intrigue you to note where Jesus parked himself when he came into the temple that day? If there's any indication that Jesus was a Presbyterian, this is it. He sat in the back pew. Hi, back there, everybody. Yeah, it's great. Even up there, yeah, it's great. He sat at the back, and the lesson has it, now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury. Interestingly, what Jesus was watching was not what they put in, but how they put it in. This is an important difference. And that I read about a church in which the practice was to publish the amount that every individual gave every week. They put it in the church bulletin. Yeah, I know. John Jones gave 20 bucks. Mary Stevens gave 10, and so on and so on. I mean, should we do that here? I mean, somewhere I read that a minister who walked down the aisle while the collection was taking place, and he looked at what every single member put into the plate. After it was gathered, he returned to the pulpit, and he said, quote, I know that some of you are upset with me for what I have just done, but I wanted you to know that as surely as I know what you gave, God knows what you gave. I don't know how long he lasted at that church, but but God knows, of course, how much the widow gave and how much all the others gave as well and how much you and I will give. But Jesus also knew how that offering was given. The issue, you see, wasn't the amount. The generous spirit in which the offering was made, Jesus told his companions, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. They all gave out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty. And she put everything, all that she had. Now, should she have done that? Given everything that she had, even the last little bit of food to God? God didn't need it. But then I don't need it when my child gives me a gift. For the time being, I am far wealthier than my child. I could buy for myself anything that he might buy for me, but he still gives me gifts, birthday gifts and Christmas gifts and Father's Day gifts. Why? For the same reason that I gave gifts to my dad. They said, I love you, Dad. And the value of those gifts is far greater than any dollar amount involved. My dad didn't need anything that I ever gave him. And I gave him the worst neckties you can imagine. I have little taste now. I used to have worse taste back then. But I needed to give. I needed to tap into a generous spirit to give those gifts to him. No, God did not need what that widow gave or what you and I will give. Instead, we give generously to God as an expression of our relationship. We give generously because we need to give. Money is important, and the effect of our generosity is enormous. And then the third thing is it is a generous spirit that moves the world and changes the world. Let me give you an example of how that works. Ernest Gordon, the author of Through the Valley of the Kwai, is a true account of World War II prison camp on the River Kwai. One of the key figures in his account is a Presbyterian who was in the camp named Angus McGillivray. McGillivray. Angus. He transformed the camp by his generous, his selfless example towards a friend of his who was dying. Here's a summary of what happened. Angus was a Scottish prisoner in a camp filled with Americans and Australians and British who had played a role in the building of the famous bridge across the River Kwai. The spirit in the camp had become ugly. It was a dog-eat-dog kind of place. Every man concerned primarily for himself. The prisoners, though all allies, they stole from each other. They cheated from each other. Men would go to sleep at night with their packs under their heads and wake up in the morning and the pack would be gone. Survival was the basic rule of everyday living. Every day. And then Angus died. Now, Angus died. They would thought that Angus, so big, so strong, he would be able to, would not succumb to death in the camp. He would be able to survive. And the story of his death, though, transformed the camp. The Scottish soldiers, known as Argyles, took the buddy system very seriously. Each buddy was known as a mucker. And in the buddy system, each one was to make sure his mucker survived. But Angus's mucker was dying and everyone had given up on him. Everyone, that is, except Angus. Angus was going to make sure that his buddy, his mucker, survived. And when his buddy's blanket was stolen, Angus gave him his. At mealtimes, Angus would get his own rations and then would take them to his friend and watch over him while he ate. And as the mucker began to recover, because of Angus's care, Angus himself was failing. One day he collapsed, he slumped over, and he died. And according to the camp doctor, Angus had died of starvation and exhaustion. It became known that he had been giving his mucker everything he had to nurse him back to health and to life. And as the story circulated throughout the camp, the spirit of the camp began to change. Prisoners began to focus more on their friends than on themselves. They began to pool their talents instead of being fundamentally concerned only for themselves. The man who could make violins began to make rather pitiful instruments, but he made them. And the man who had experienced leading an orchestra began putting together an orchestra. The one who had been a professor began to teach classes. The cabinet maker did his best to make cabinets for the men to store their things. A church came into being called the Church Without Walls. Services were so compelling, so powerful, that even the guards started to attend and to listen to the worship services. A makeshift university sprang up to life, as well as a hospital and a library system. In a matter of time, the whole camp was transformed, and the transformation was the cause for survival of so many other, many of them who otherwise would have died. And Angus was responsible for it all. Angus, he had the what he had given to his friend, and the results of that giving were astounding. One man's contribution made a huge difference in a POW camp. Now, there can be no doubt that love and sacrifice and commitment drove this Scottish warrior to do what he did for his friend. The summation of all that love, sacrifice, and commitment is generosity. One man was willing to give until he had no more to give. And then his gift kept on giving because he gave it for another. Life is only good, you know, when it's given away, when it's poured out, when it's offered. Churches can be like that. The minister of a small Presbyterian church tells of a young woman who came to him. She had given birth to a child out of wedlock. Theirs was a small little country church, and the woman was shunned by the community and made her feel ashamed. She wasn't married. She had a baby, but she brought the baby to the church for baptism anyway, all alone. And she stood there cradling her baby in her arms, and the Presbyterian minister, I'm so proud of this story. This is such a wonderful, the Presbyterian minister being, let's say, distracted, as some Presbyterian ministers tend to be, not me, but others, you know, hadn't realized how awkward this might be when he came to the part in the ritual of baptism, and he said, "Who stands with this child to assure the promises and commitments herewith will be carried out? Who will be there for this child in times of need and assure that this child is brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? And then he looked up and he realized that there was just this young girl standing there, no parents, no husband. She was all alone to answer that question. But before he could gulp his embarrassment down, his congregation was on their feet. And in one voice they said, "We will. We will." The church can do that. The church must do that. Nobel Prize-winning Bishop Tutu, Desmond Tutu, tells the story of how he became a churchman. It was in the days of apartheid in South Africa when a black man was walking down the sidewalk and a white person was coming towards them. The black person had to step into the street to allow the white person to walk by. One day, he was walking with his mother. And a white man was coming towards them. And before they could step into the street, the white man stepped out into the street. And as they walked by, he tipped his hat out of respect to Desmond Tutu's mother. And he said to his mom, "Mom, who was that man? Who was that man?" And his mother said, "That is an Anglican priest. He is a man of God." Desmond Tutu never forgot that. He said, "It was right then that I decided that I would be an Anglican priest. I would be a man of God." And that's what he did. Now, for you and I know that priest, probably a little, unnoteworthy man of God, just the pastor of a little church. No idea that he had begun the work of creating a man who, in his acts of righteousness, would become an international figure, a premier worker for justice, and would one day win the Nobel Prize. But that is what God can do with our generosity. So there should be a sense of giddiness, a recklessness about our offering to the Lord. Of all the commandments, which is the most important? The most important one to answer Jesus is this: "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is our love, the Lord your God, love with all your heart and with all of your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than this. You see, stewardship doesn't simply end with an attitude of gratitude. If it did, any naturalist or a forest ranger would be able to tell you, all you have to do is go and take care of the world. Stewardship finds its best expression in living each day in the light of your baptism, celebrating God's presence in our lives, doing good works for our neighbors, making everyday decisions based upon Christian ethics, treating each other with compassion, forgiving and loving, and entering into authentic relationships. Being stewards of the mysteries of God means living life in response to the unconditional love of God. To put away our idols of security and comfort and health, and to trust our lives to God's great purpose. To trust in God. There's a story told of a Frenchman named Francis Gravelet. He was a tightrope walker. He went by the name of the Great Blondine. He loved to thrill crowds. There was a tightrope across Niagara Falls, the horseshoe part of the falls, and he would go out there and he would do somersaults and he would sit on chairs and he would do all kinds of crazy things out there, and big crowds came to see him. This is back in the 1800s. They came out by the thousands and they would gasp at all of his death-defying trips. They cheered wildly at his successes. His most memorable performance came in 1860. He'd worked the crowd up to a fevered pitch. "You're the greatest! You're the best in the world!" they shouted. And he announced, "I will carry one of you across the falls on my back." "Yes, you can do it! You can do it!" "The Great Blondine can do this thing." And he looked out on the sea of spectators and he asked, "Okay, let me have a volunteer." Yeah, the silence was deafening. Thousands of people believed that he could do it, but nobody was willing to be the one to trust him with their lives. And finally, he asked his manager to get on my piggyback here. And with a terrified man hanging on his back for dear life, he set out over the thunder and the mist of the Great Falls the other side. But you see, that is stewardship. Trusting God so much, we're willing to risk our lives for the sake of the kingdom. God expects us to give and to give generously out of all the things that we have and all the things that we are. Stewardship begins with admitting that everything belongs to God in the first place. That's the reality of it. We are to worship regularly. We are to serve eagerly. We are to give generously every blessing in abundance. And you will get that nowhere else but with God. Let us give thanks for that. Our Father, all of us are here to cheer you on and to cheer each other on, but there's that moment when you ask of us to climb on your back as you go across the waterfall. Oh, no, that's too much. Rather than giving of ourselves, all of us, we'd rather you just use us as advisors. And yet, the soldiers of Christ throughout history have given of themselves and created a tremendous church. Not just this one, but across the world. So much goodness, so much care, so much grace shared with people that are so desperate for it. And we have a role to play in that. We do stand on the shoulders of great men and women in this church who have been here before and provided this place and this ministry for us. And now it is up to us. We ask you to bless us as we are a blessing to others. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.